Hello and welcome to show 88 of the Mini PC Show. Big talk, small computers. And are we going to go this back in time? Anyhow, this is brought to you by Captain Zero. So thank you for your support. We greatly appreciate it.
Hey, Rich. So how's everything going with you?
I'm confused. Dazed and confused. But there's no Libyan terrorist stealing my plutonium, so I'm okay.
Well, that's a good thing then, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still working on the setup here.
Gotcha. Okay. First link I'm going to mention is a really good friend, host, who a guy who hosted Podnuts Daily. He was on the Great Tech Debate, which was like one of the first shows we had on the network. He was on the Mini PC Show here. He's been on episodes of The Makers, and he's been on, I think, well over 200 episodes of Android App Addict. Eric R. Dini. Was diagnosed with stage 3 liver cancer. It's not looking great for him. It's a very rapid, fast-moving cancer. I ask everyone, I don't ask a lot of stuff from a lot of people, is what I'm going to say. I'm going to ask people to support Eric's family. He isn't stinking rich. He's a hardworking man. He has a government job, aka he doesn't get paid a lot of money. I don't think he has a good life insurance policy because, again, a government employee, not a lot of money. So we have a GoFundMe going thanks to his sister. Link will be in the notes. I will ask that if you do consider doing this, that you contribute sooner rather than later, just to help the trending status in a GoFundMe. Hypothetically, you say to yourself, I want to donate $20, but I only have $5 right now. Please donate the $5 right now. And then in a week or whatever, you can donate the other $15. We need to keep this as a hot, campaign, is what I'm going to say. He's going to need all the help he can get. He just got approved for a medication that has a very low percentage chance of working, but a low percentage chance of working is better than no chance of working. So I'm going to just ask everyone, if you can, please support Eric R. Dini. I've said it in the past, support those who support you. Eric has supported this network insanely, and I would really appreciate it if we could support him back.
Yeah, that is a big deal. And I've seen GoFundMes for all sorts of stuff, and I can't figure the formula where they hit big versus where they don't. And you know, I don't think there's anything more serious than this. So if anybody's out there, and it doesn't matter what you got, if you can find a way to send something in, please do.
Okay, just let you know, you're hearing your own echo there somehow.
I'm getting my audio feedback here.
You were, because my mic was disabled, at least on my mumble.
Okie doke. I don't know how to continue, but hopefully I'm good.
Well, first link I'm going to talk about is, I know you're not a gamer, Rich, so I just want to get this out of the way. And the reason I'm bringing this to the Mini PC Show, it will be apparent what I'm going to say. Line 864 in the notes, Rich, it's basically nothing more than a YouTube event where Google came out and they talked about their try into the gaming arena called Stadia, which I'll say is an absolutely horrible name, but it's called Stadia. And to a lot of people who are older, is what I'm going to say, this is not going to make any sense. This is a heavily YouTube focused gaming experience, and for the people that don't understand why people watch people play video games on YouTube, then I will ask you, do you like watching basketball on TV? Do you like watching football on TV? Do you like watching game shows on TV? Do you like watching soccer on TV? Well, every single reason you can name, fishing. Do you like watching fishing on TV? Do you like watching people on the shooting range hitting like targets? All those exact same reasons why you like to watch them is the same reason why every kid likes to watch video games on YouTube. They like to see somebody do stuff that maybe they can't do, but they might aspire to be able to do. The gaming system is going to be integrated into YouTube. It's going to have deep links. So basically I can hit like a, a button and it will basically spawn that exact same session state with the exact same inventory in a exact pixel perfect position and let anybody else hop on and play it. You're going to be able to instantaneously stream your game with zero performance hit. The compute engine that's going to be available for each game session will be more powerful than the latest Xbox plus the latest PlayStation combined. No price mentioned as of yet. I will just say Google's making enough money. Also, they didn't say this, but they're going to be able to basically sell dynamic ads inside of the game because, you know, they're an ad-based company. They have the ability to take a loss for, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years before they have to make money on this thing. And that alone is going to make this a very dangerous endeavor for anybody who thinks that this like won't change the game. I'm going to tell you right now, this is probably going to change everything about games for the future moving forward. You'll never own a game ever again. You're just going to rent it for a length of time, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, but you're never going to own anything ever again. And it's going to be a subscription service, I'm sure of. And the reason I'm bringing it up on this show is we've talked many times about having micro, small form factor, Android-based home theater PCs. Well, this system, you can literally start playing on a Linux laptop, hit pause, hop on your Windows tablet. 3 seconds later, you're playing that same game. You can then hit pause. You can then pick up your Android phone. They showed it, of course, off on a Pixel device. 3 seconds later, you're playing that exact same game in that exact same state. You can then hit pause. And then 3 seconds later, you can start playing it on your smart TV in the exact same place you were. Then you can hit pause again and you can run it on, you know, anything Android, anything Windows, more than likely anything Mac as well, and anything Linux on a full computer. As long as it runs the Chrome browser, you're fine. And anything running Android or Chromecast Ultra, you'll be able to run this on. Ubiquity. And this is what we've wanted in the Linux world forever. We want to be able to play the same games as the people do on Windows. Well, it's going to be enabled through this system. The bad part is we're not going to have root. We're not going to own the games. We're not going to have any rights. We're going to be dirty users. But you could technically get an Odroid C2 for like $30 and experience gaming like you were on a $2,000 computer. So it's going to be very impressive, I think, what they're going to be able to pull off as long as you have the bandwidth. Creative Labs. I was guessing. Well, the Creative Labs had the, I always want to say Zen, but it wasn't. Yeah, Twitch just allows for streaming, which means most players have to either have a $2,000 computer if they want to play something high end, or they have to buy a $500 console and then a $300 piece of hardware in order to stream. This is all going to be baked in. He's the number one YouTube, period. I did once. He has, I think, mental defects, too many mental defects for me to watch. Here's the gimmick, though. All Twitch does is streaming. It does nothing else. So they need to do something right now before this thing launches. It's going to launch sometime this year, or essentially Twitch will be dead to a lot of people. Well, and Steam better do something, too, or else Steam will also be dead in no time. Okay, hold on, Rich. Is your mic in mumble not turning on or something? No. So how am I hearing you? I thought I... Because...
Okay, now... Sorry. All right. I clicked on something else. All right. So Twitch and Steam definitely need to get together because they're both on the chopping block. They both have a target on them from YouTube right now because of this, or Google because of this. People are making lots of money streaming YouTube videos of them playing games. So I really think that's a killer app. That's a killer app for YouTube. That's a killer app for Google. And that's really going to knock people out.
Well, games have been making more money than the movie television industry combined for like 5 years now. So the amount of money is insane. But I'll say this. Nobody cares about the hardcore gamers. Sony doesn't care about the hardcore gamers. Xbox doesn't care about the hardcore gamers. Nintendo doesn't care about the hardcore gamers. PC kind of care about the hardcore gamers. And the reason being is they're already customers. This is like your cable provider. This is like your cell phone provider. They don't care about you. You're already paying them money. They only care about the new customers kind of thing. And that's the honest to goodness truth.
Or gaining market share. Like Verizon wants to get T-Mobile customers or AT&T customers.
Yeah, so Steam, your days are numbered. You're now the dead man walking. You better do something. Twitch, you're the dead man walking. You better do something. Microsoft is the one who's coming out with a digital-only platform here. So they're going to probably end up supporting it. Microsoft has been the most friendly to the other game companies here for the last like 2 years than anybody else. So they're going to probably have this on their system very shortly thereafter is what I'm going to say. The Google system will accept supposedly any controller there is. An Xbox controller, a Sony controller, a Nintendo controller, a Steam controller, any and everything. If they price it right is what I'm going to say. They are going to change, I think, what it means to play games. And like, here's like a dirty secret, Rich. Right now, they have these Battle Royale games. They're the latest thing, honestly. Millions of dollars a day. But they're limited to having like 100 people in a game session. And that's because of the lag from console to console, because they have to go from the console to the server down to the other consoles. And they, you know, it's very difficult to have all this stuff's time to sync right. Well, if the same infrastructure in the same data center is basically hosting the virtual console and the virtual a server, you could literally have like a city in a game with 10,000 players in it kind of thing. So this is the kind of functionality that's literally going to change gaming.
Wow.
And like here's the other thing. Hypothetically, I stream games. I don't care about people seeing my face, but I stream games. But my bandwidth is low today. Because the game is actually in the cloud already on a YouTube server, essentially, I can stream the game down to me in the lowest quality
and
possible. And then every customer viewing that can see it in pristine 4K.
Well, it doesn't matter, because pretty much when you talk about our internet feeds are asymmetric. So at the Hughes Compound Southern Command, I get like 150 down and 10 up. And here I have AT&T, and I'm getting like 200 down and 100 up. So your upward, it may just be the video of your face in the corner. And you may you probably can have that ability that you select your laptop camera. You say select camera, put it in the lower right corner, and go with that. And that's going to be the only thing going upstream, because it's going to know your point of view. And it can, you know, green screen in your play as you go. So the only thing upstream might be, you know, the video thumbnail of you in the lower third or lower quarter or whatever, and your audio content. That I could just see massive, you know, MMOs played that way. That I could see it.
Yeah, and the gimmick is like during the project stream test they did last year with Assassin's Creed, you only needed 15 meg down speed. And you could run it on a moderate range, a lower range Chromebook, and it ran just fine over Wi-Fi. So, you know, the bandwidth a lot of people have will be too much bandwidth for the basic use case. Now, if you want 4K and they're promising in the future 8K, oh yeah, you're going to need some bandwidth. And kids wanting to play games 6 to 8 hours a day kind of thing, because that's what they want to do, you better have a very high bandwidth cap.
So, can I ask you a question? Do you have any 4K TVs?
Hell no.
Okay. All right. I have, let's see, 43-inch 1080p TVs that I got at Walmart for like $100 and change. I'm super happy with them. Dumb TVs, they're working great. I have a 50-inch 4K TV and had it for a number of years and looks great. My wife had to have a 70-inch TV and it's 4K. I can't see the pixels. I can't see the graininess of that. I'm like, how big of a TV would you have to need 8K? Because I would say you don't need 8K at 70 inches.
I would say probably 100, if not more. I'm pretty sure, how much content is there going to be for it in reality? And B, you have to have really good eyeballs in order to see the difference.
Right, right.
So, I mean, and look, I will have to get this when this becomes real because of my kids.
Oh, you're not going to have a choice. You're going to be on the Google crack.
Well, and if they do it intelligently, which they probably won't because they're smarter than me, is they will say, buy this controller, which they have, which is a very functional, dedicated controller that doesn't connect via Bluetooth to your device. Instead, it connects Wi-Fi to your router. So it's a more direct route to the cloud. Like you buy the controller, you get X number of months free, or you are already a YouTube Red, a YouTube Premier person, paying person, you might be able to get X months free. If they do it right, they're going to hook a lot of people really quickly, is my logic. And I'm going to have to get it because my kids love watching stupid people play games. And if they can watch stupid people play games and click a button right there and 3 or 5 seconds later be playing that very same game, I then have a lot of power in the palm of my hand to control those children. And I love having power over my children. I ain't got no problem saying that. So that, I mean, it's interesting. We'll see. I'm going to love the fact that hopefully we'll be able to buy low-end mini PCs, plug this up via HDMI to a TV, and get pretty decent results. Also, a lot of these mini PCs have gigabit NICs. So realistically, we could have essentially a $2,000 gaming rig for $45 or $50. This will completely, pun intended, change the game. Can't hear you. We don't hear you, Rich. No, we can't hear you at all. Nope. You're not even in the mumble.
Am I back?
Yep.
Okie doke. So I am here at the Orlando Outpost, and I'm not at the Hughes Compound Southern Command, but I brought with me all sorts of, you know, pie stuff, and this is my ROC 64. Now, the ROC 64's got a single USB port on it, but what I was thinking about, hold on, I got to reach and grab something. Oh, here it is. So this is a, who is it made by? It's got three USB 3 ports on it and gigabit Ethernet also. So if I plug that into my ROC 64, not my ROC Pro, all of a sudden I've got two USB gigabit Ethernet ports and three USB 3 Ethernet ports. Now the next question is, what are you going to do with it? Well, of course you could use it as a router. But what I was thinking about is I have a ROC Pro and I have a daughter board with a bunch of USB 3 ports on it, and it comes with two of its own. I could plug all of my USB 3 drives in that I'm not using, set it up as an NFS server, and I could take all of my devices that have USB 3 on them and plug a second USB 3 gigabit Ethernet port on it and set up a storage area network, sort of, with USB 3. Now, does that have any merit? Is it worth doing it?
Well, you set up a JBOD and it should work, and it should work, I would say, fine. You get two advantages, I'll say, from doing it that way. You can either A, bind both the NICs into one interface so they can perform technically. Could be.
Yeah, I don't have a switch for that. I would have to have a managed switch to be able to do that, to bond the ports.
Right, or you could have it basically be bridging two separate networks. So you can literally have your isolated, trusted network, and then you could have your user-type network.
So I was thinking about a storage network. I don't know if there'd be any advantage, because I'm already gig-switched. If I'm hardwired and gig-switched, is there any reason to set up a storage network with all of the, you know, bunch of disks that I got?
Only if you would want like a backup domain, like you have a separate LAN just for backups or duplicating data, migrating data kind of thing. So you don't want to take up your bandwidth, you know, take up the bandwidth for like watching YouTube or Plex or something else.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I've been toying with.
Gotcha. There were two other links in the notes, Rich, that really caught my eye. This week, one is, I'll say, the obvious one that I've seen more than a couple people talk about, and that is the NVIDIA Jetson Nano board. I will say I like the idea of a Jetson board, but before they were like, I want to say $600, they were definitely a bit expensive.
Right. Yeah, they're pretty high end.
Yeah, and then real quick, I also almost forgot this. The streaming game thing. Okay, this is not the first time. This is literally like the fifth company to try this. On Live was one of the first ones to try it. There's been a couple other ones since then, but the last one to try to do this was Nvidia themselves. Last year they announced it, but I don't know if anything ever came of it. So right now, Nvidia might be a little unhappy because they're being like outplayed, Google is not using Nvidia. They're using I want to say it was AMD graphics. They're using Intel chips, and it's all running on Linux servers. But line 850 in the notes is the Nvidia Jetson
board. I'm getting chills. I'm reading about this. All right, so Nano's 128-core Maxwell GPU quad-core ARM A57 processor can deliver 472 gigaflops. Is that as many gigawatts as it takes to send Marty back to the future?
I hope it doesn't take more than that.
Consuming a miserly 5 watts.
Wow.
I don't know what this does, but I think I need one.
Yeah, now I will say this. The NVIDIA 128-core Maxwell-based GPU. The ARM processor on it looks not like crazy impressive, but the GPU is where it gets impressive. I will say the only device I ever had, I had two devices that had more advanced NVIDIA GPUs in them. And one of them was the original Nexus 7 tablet. And the original Nexus 7 tablet ran crazy butter smooth. Games ran insanely fast on that processor. I do believe the Shield TV, the Shield tablet, and another device has a Maxwell core. I think one of them has a 256 core, and I think the other one does have 128 core. This is not your normal mini PC for normal use cases, what I'm going to say. This is a very solid ARM-based processor with an insane GPU on this. Like we talked about last week, having that little USB pluggable Google board and with its own GPU doing TensorFlow and stuff, which this might be able to legitimately compete with it. The only disadvantage is it's all on the one board. And when it's bogged down with processing power, there is no alternate stuff you can use. Yeah, we cannot hear you, dude. And no.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Or sorry about that. So I'm looking over on CNX Software, and they have all of the specs for this. So it's the 128-core Maxwell GPU, quad-core ARM A57 1.43 gigahertz, 4 gig of 64-bit LPDDR4 at 25.6 gigabits per second storage, micro SD slot, 16 gig eMMC. It says production, so I don't know if that's on the actual board. Video encode, 4K at 30 frames per second. Then it says 4 times 1080p at 30 frames a second. 9 times. So this is, I don't know where they're doing the video in. It didn't, but we'll get to that. Video decode, 4K at 60 frames per second, 2 4K at 30 frames per second, 8 1080p. Holy crap. Dimensions are 70 by 45 millimeter. So the baseboard has 260 pin SODIMM connector for Jetson Nano module. I don't know what that is. Video out, so it's got HDMI 2 in EDP 1.4 video only. So I'm guessing that's coming off the USB-C port. Connectivity, it has 1 gigabit Ethernet, and it says 4-pin PoE header. Okay, so I don't know if you can do directly power over Ethernet for it, or if you have to have something else. But here's a big seller, 4 USB 3.0 ports, 1 USB 2.0 port, USB 2.0 micro B port for power or device mode, which I don't know how you can get enough power over that to run it. It's got whatever camera port, for Raspberry Pi camera module V2. It's got an M2 PCIe, all right, so M2 key E socket. I'm not sure exactly what that is. It says PCIe 1X USB 2.0. All right, so it says four wireless networking cards. So I guess you can drop a daughter board on there for wireless networking. 40-pin expansion, GPIO, I2C, I2S, SPI, UART. 8-pin button header, so power reset, recovery, blah. Power supply, 5 volts, 4 amps. I figured it would draw a lot more power, but and so it's got a barrel connector for that. This thing is screaming. So what it's showing, if you scroll down, if you're on the CNX site looking at it, it's showing you could have like 8 video cameras. So you could do, now I don't know if that has to be digital. It's showing PCIe. So it's saying you could use this as an 8 camera NVR system, which is actually what I have at my house.
Yeah, it's connected via gig NICs, it says gig.
Okay, network. So it... All right, so they're saying you could pick up 8 cameras, gig Ethernet. Okay, so if you have Ethernet cameras at your house, you could just plug this thing in and have it as your work as your NVR. Wow.
Yeah, this is the
this
kind
is
of
quite
board, sorry,
quite the screamer.
Yeah, this is the kind of board I want to see projects done with this thing because it's the kind of thing. I want to see somebody stress it. I want to see somebody pressure this thing because it's going to take a hell of a lot. Now, for $99, I will say, if you take off a lot of the options, a lot of the ports, a lot of the IO, it's still worth $99. I mean, I personally think it's still worth $99, considering the other Jetson was like $600. I want to say, you get, you know, all these ports, you get all this IO, you get an M.2, a PCIe socket, you get all the connectivity, the multiple USB 3 ports. This is a beast. It's almost it's a beast for $99. It's nearly a steal.
Yeah, I'm like, take my money. This is definitely in my book a take my money now. How do I get it to you? Well, because I want the TensorFlow libraries running on this. That's what I want.
Well, see, you already have a good use case in mind for it. What I will say is for some people, you really should wait because it's a question of what operating systems are going to be not only supported on it, but really, truly optimized for it. Because there's a law of diminishing returns. If you really want to get the proper bang out of this system, you're going to need a very honed operating system, a very optimized operating system. And I'm sure when you're doing the facial recognition and stuff like that, you're going to get really good performance out of it. If you're thinking about doing more normal desktop type things, you might not get you know, every ounce of power out of it like that. But I could see this is the kind of box, if the software is even fair on it, you could run easily 10, 15 different services on it, server services on it, and this thing have literally no problem running it.
So as I'm reading this, it says video output HDMI 2.0 and EDP 1.4. So I'm assuming the USB-C is the display port. You could hang two monitors off it.
Yeah.
They're not showing that in the diagram. I would get two of these in a heartbeat.
Well, and the only thing, here's what I'll say. And the only thing that I want clarification on, and it's just to affirm what I already know. If you use the micro USB for power, which it does say power supply, 5-volt, 4-amp via power barrel, or 5-volt, 2-amp via micro USB port.
Oh, okay.
It does say you can do that, but you will lose functionality on the board. Like the
you're definitely not running at full power with 2 amps.
It wouldn't shock me if like the processor will run full power, but you'll get no video out, or the USB 3 will not power anything that is USB 3.
Or the GPU is going to run at half speed.
Yeah, something. But it's good to have it as an option, I'll say, because technically speaking, if you want, maybe it would even allow you to plug up both. So if you could have a battery backup on the micro USB side, and if you have a power outage, you can at least have something still up and running, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to have some sort of onboard power management to handle that, to say, okay, my barrel jack went dead. Let me pull power off, you know, the micro USB. Not sure about that. But that, I just loaded, I'm just holding this up. It just finished loading. I'm loading TensorFlow on my Raspberry Pi 3 right here. Actually, this is a stack of two Raspberry Pi 3s. For the top one, I just loaded TensorFlow to do, you know, facial recognition type stuff, test it out, see what it's like, if it's usable at all. But absolutely. So I can see two uses for this. Of course, I want to do facial recognition type stuff. And the other thing I'd want to do is if it's got two display ports or, you know, it has HDMI and a display port on it, I want to have it as my, you know, thin desktop for my home, because what I do is I travel with my MacBook Pro and my Chromebook, but I would love to be able to sit down at my desk at home and not have either around and be able to do something and have it power both monitors. That would be fantastic. And that I could just, you know, plug my MacBook in and VNC into it or whatever, you know, use Synergy to share the keyboard, just work it that way.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And since it's got four USB 3.0 ports, you could plug one of these gig Ethernet doohickeses with extra ports into it.
Yeah. And you can right now go pre-order at Seed Studio, S-E-E-D Studio, or Aero for $99. And it looks like it's going to be a scheduled shipment of April the 12th. So quite literally less than a month away, which is awesome.
Crap. When we finish the podcast, I'm buying one.
I want to make sure I got money and a buffer for when the PineBook Pro gets announced. So I got to not touch some money right now.
Oh, well, if you have the right friends, they'll just send you one.
I don't have any friends. really quick tangent. I respect the Pine organization immensely.
Oh, yeah.
But they do not understand how the internet works. Okay, calling it the PineBook Pro was stupid. Unbelievably, incompetently stupid. Because right now, if you go to look for PineBook Pro, nobody knows, is it PineBook-Pro? Is it all one word, PineBook Pro, or is it two separate words? And no matter what, when you search that, you're going to find a whole bunch of stuff about PineBook. And you're going to find people that are basically dissatisfied with it. And you're going to find it where it says it's $99. And they're like, I thought it was $200. Why can I buy it now? I thought it wasn't available yet.
Oh, boy. Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. You know, for somebody like me, we know what's going on. And we're just talking about this because I was just on Tilts and I sent my PineBook over to Joel. And unfortunately, I didn't wipe it. And he's like, oh, yeah, I signed into your Google account. I'm like, uh-oh. For $100 to have something 14 inches that has a battery that'll run all stink day, that you can has a, I don't want to say, you know, retina quality display, but a really good display that you can play Netflix, YouTube, fill in the blank, other streaming services. You know, my Plex is big on my list. The downfall on that was the audio was bad. The trackpad was, as far as I'm concerned, I got my value out of that $100. I hope they made a profit on it. I can't figure out how they would have, but definitely it was worth $100. Was it great compared to other things 2, 3, 4, 5 times the price? No, it wasn't. But do I want to support them? Do I want to give my money? Absolutely.
Yeah. And, the screen alone had to be nearly all of the $100 is what I'm going to say. Because everywhere
that
you
was a high quality screen.
Well, and here's the thing. It didn't even have to be. I mean, you go to buy even a 7 or 10 inch screen to connect to your mini computer. They want to charge above $60 for it.
And screens increase at the square of their size. So because there's more real estate, it's based on the square area of the screen. And that's how the prices go.
Right. So they should call it something else. It's probably too late, but they really should call it something completely different because they need to like make it much easier for people to find and stumble across. Because now my Google feed and my Google alert where I set it for the PineBook Pro, I'm insatiated with old PineBook stuff. And I don't want PineBook stuff. But some people are calling it Pinebook Dash Pro. Some people are doing it as two separate words. Some people are camel casing it, making it all one word. So it's going to be nearly impossible for this thing to get traction, except for people like you or me, or the dedicated people who like push this link out and, you know, talk about it. Now, there's no doubt 3 months, 4 months after it's launched, it's going to be able to get its own traction just fine. But because of that flaw in the name, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them to get upfront traction.
So I'm just looking. I did a video on the Pinebook 64 a year ago. I got 10,000 views on that. And, you know, it does real good. But yeah, if people are searching and they find that Pinebook 64, well, it doesn't say Pinebook Pro. Well, maybe it's the same thing. You don't know.
Yeah, it's just going to confuse people. But as long as I can find it the day it gets announced and I can pre-purchase it, I will, because I think it is going to be a very look. The touchpad was horrible. The fact that the entire keyboard panel flexed when you typed wasn't good. The speakers were pathetic. And it's going to have at least an upgrade path in the Pinebook Pro. So $200 to me is well worth it.
The press release did say they were going to have an upgrade board for the Pinebook. So I don't know if I'd bother, but maybe.
Well, you're going to get a metal case in the new one, and the upgrade path right now.
Didn't it say magnesium case?
It's some kind of alloy. But
I think it said magnesium.
Only one of the previous Pinebooks will have an upgrade path right now. I can't remember if it was the 10 or the 14. And they were looking at trying to do it with the other one as well.
Oh, okay.
But the other big link, I'll say, of the week that honestly did not get close to as much traction as I was really hoping, line 865, sorry. It's the Up Extreme, the Upboard Extreme. Now, I had an Upboard, thank you, Rich. I abused the hell out of it. It ran unbelievably good, unbelievably solid. I think the problem was somehow in the BIOS, in the firmware of the board, something went wrong. But with this new Up Extreme, I don't believe you can even order it yet. This is going to be available in i3, i5, and i7 Whiskey Lake processors. This is going to be basically a crazy beast. It's going to have dual gigabit NIC. Two USB 3, a SIM card slot, M.2 E key, same thing in the other one, another M.2 B key, don't know what that means, RTC battery, pins, SATA connectors, HDMI and display port, more USB 3, so four total ports. This is going to be a very, very impressive board when it comes out.
Where's the pricing on this?
Huh. You noticed that too, huh?
Yeah, because I hate to say it, if it's Nook priced, I think I'm probably going to spend my money on a Nook. Not that I'm not all sorts of excited about it. So here's the problem when you get these a la carte boards. You need to look at what does it cost to make this work. So when you add the RAM, when you add the case, when you add the power supply, if you just bought a Nook and added the RAM and the drive to it, would it have been cheaper? And this is the thing that I wanted to set up a VMware cluster lab. And the question is, how cheap can I do it? And is it cheaper to do it with Nooks, or is it cheaper to do it with something like this? And you know what? Forget the case. I could 3D print a case. But I designed a case for their Up Squared board, and that's on Thingiverse right now. So it might not be a bargain. I'm excited about it, and more power to them. They've done some very cool stuff. But I'm not quite sure if this is a take my money now, I want to buy it.
Well, I will say I agree only because you know, if I'm the farmer and I sell milk and then somebody else is buying my milk and reselling it, it's almost going to be impossible for them to beat my price because the milk's coming from me. The Intel Nook, they're making their own chips. So they're going to get some chips for less than anybody. So the likelihood that you're going to be able to buy another board and get it for less with the same amount of power is not really going to happen. Now, where the up extreme can be better than a NUC is with different IO. If you have very specific needs, I can see why this would be a better pick. But if you just want a mini Intel-based computer and you're going to make it fit your workflow, it is super difficult to beat the NUC. It is just expandable, just the right ways as far as I can tell. The prices are really nice. It is very VESA mountable. It is a very good form factor, very stable form factor. Everybody I know who has ever gotten any kind of the NUC has been nothing but happy with it.
Oh, and I don't know if I mentioned, but I've got a Gen 6 NUC. And so it's actually right on my desk here. So my VMware lab is running on a i5 Gen 6 NUC, and a Gen 6 Celeron is my NFS store. And the thing went DOA. It wouldn't post, wouldn't go into BIOS. There's actually a 3-year warranty on it, and they shipped me out a new one as same day. Basically, it got to them for replacement, RMA replacement. Later that day, I got another one sent back to me, and I think I had it overnight. So I definitely want to give Intel props. The board the up board, which I got two of these, and I gave one to Dor. When I had a problem with it, they're like, oh, check the forum. I'm like, okay. I'm like, look, if it's under warranty, can I just show you proof I destroyed the board? You ship me another one, because it's coming from like Sweden or whatever, you know, somewhere in Northern Europe. And they're like, no, you have to ship it back. I'm like, I don't know. It's really not worth it.
Yeah, so, I want to say Denmark. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's one of them. And I'm not trying to throw them under the bus. I really love what they do. And like I keep holding up in front of the camera right now, here is my upboard, the twin to the one that Dor got. And I'm thinking about using that for, you know, OpenCV, TensorFlow, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I consider them to be a good company. I want them to be successful. But like right now, if you go to the page for the Up Extreme, and towards the bottom, they do have a button that says order a sample. Click order a sample. It takes you to the store where there's no Up Extremes in the store. They have Up AI Edge and all these other boards. And they're expensive. That's the one thing about the Up board is you're not buying like the K car. You're not buying the Hyundai Excel. You know what I mean? You're not buying the Yugo. You're buying a Cadillac. You're buying a Porsche. You're buying something that is very nice. So none of them are cheap. They're if your goal is to be efficient and light on price with good functionality, you don't get an upboard. If you want something high end, you get an upboard. I wish they were physically closer to us, because then we would probably get better customer service. But we're not, so we don't.
Yeah, I kind of mildly looked at their stuff, and I'm just looking at the, like we talked about last show, was the TensorFlow USB for $75 from Google. I'm like, take my money. Where I'm not sure what their AI Edge devices are costing, but yeah, it says order a sample.
Well, the only thing you can be sure of is they ain't cheap. They're not cheap at all.
Ooh. Yeah, it's $229 for their Cyclone 10 powered AI Edge device. So yeah, that I'll definitely throw $75 towards Google's way.
Yeah, one other thing I just wanted to throw in the notes, and it's only because I found it interesting. I was upset when I actually looked at it, because this was actually an old link and looks like you can't get it. Line 861 in the notes. I believe it's pronounced PISO, P-I-S-O. It's a Raspberry Pi Zero based, like a huge thumb drive is what I'm going to say, even though it's really not huge. It's basically the size of a Raspberry Pi Zero, like 2 times thicker or 3 times thicker. And it has a couple buttons on it and a micro screen on it. And what this enabled you to do was to either connect it to a computer, which would then power the device. You have buttons on it. At least I think it powered the device. I don't think it had a battery on it. It had buttons on it. Right there, you could create partitions on your Raspberry Pi. So you could literally plug it in and say, okay, now I want to create a Windows partition and present this to Windows. And then it would show up in your Explorer. Or you could have a folder filled with ISO files, and you could say, okay, mount this ISO and now reboot the computer and boot to it as if it's a CD. I loved the idea of this. I watched the video. I thought this was really cool. Then I go and look and I can see this has been done for like over a year and you can't buy these anywhere. And I'm upset and I cannot find anybody offering anything like this for purchase, which kind of shocks me now that I think about it, because this to me seems like a perfect use case for a, you know, somebody like a nerd would like and would pay money to have this kind of functionality in their pocket.
Okay, if I'm reading this right, it's just sharing out the SD card on the Pi Zero, because I don't see any place for storage on this device.
Yeah, you basically put in it like a, you know, 128 gig micro SD card. You have the first, I want to say it was 4 gig just for the OS, and then the rest of it you can carve up to as many partitions as you want and present any one that you want to the operating system as a drive.
Crazy cool. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't know how they can give this away for $22. That's and 2 for $50 or 3 for $66. That seems way cheap. I mean, maybe you can do it, but it don't get me wrong. The display might be super cheap. The PCB can be very cheap, can be $1. The buttons on there are a few cents, but just handling is going to cost you money.
Oh, I agree. And maybe that's why I can't get any anymore, because they just like price themselves out of the business. I don't know.
Yeah, their hardware cost could literally be under $10. But pricing at $20 leaves them zero margin. You know, we're talking assembly, packaging, etc.
Yeah, and I couldn't find anything like it being offered anyplace else. So I don't know. I'm going to keep looking, see if I can find somebody. And even if it's something I got to put together myself, I don't care. I just really like the idea of being able to have multiple ISOs on a very small form factor like this, and just easily press a button and switch between them and then say, okay, now boot to this and install it. Or now this is my spin write to do, trying to fix a hard drive. This is my data recovery ISO, and have that all in that nice little neat package form factor. I just think it's really awesome. I'll encourage everyone to look at the notes. It's going to a Kickstarter page, PISO, the most versatile flash drive yet. Take a look at the video, and if you know of something like this, I beg you to let me know.
There's no link to their site or anything?
Not that I could find. Yeah, he has his personal site, but I couldn't find anywhere on that site where I could get one.
There's a GitHub for the guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you have any other topics you wanted to go over, Rich, or any other links?
Not really, but can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Little off topic. All right, so my daughter's birthday came and gone. Actually, it's her birthday today. She wanted the Apple Watch in the N-1 version, was like $200 on Amazon. And then my wife wanted one and got it. Amazon tagged you a little higher on the second one. So you get the first one for like $200. We actually have a mutual friend that works for a major avionics company, and they have a $700 watch that he said he could get me for $400. But I don't want to spend $400 on a watch. But I do see that the Samsung watch, like N-1 version on Amazon, is like $225. What do you think about those types of things?
I think most of them are complete garbage, and they are insanely overpriced, is what I'm going to say. I'll say this. If you had to pick one thing that you deemed to be the most important aspect of the watch, whether it be heart rate, whether it be notification integration, whether it be battery life kind of thing, what is the one thing you really have to have?
Yeah, that's the whole thing about it. I can't say, oh my gosh, I have to have it. And one of my coworkers, all right, got it, sits next to me, has the Apple Watch. And I think he's more of an Apple fanboy. So he's going to say it's really good, but he can't quite tell me why. And the guy across from me has the Galaxy Watch. He kind of, he didn't want to make it seem like he made a bad purchase, but it kind of seemed like he said at $225, I'm not sure if I'd buy one today. So I'm kind of on the fence, but kind of leaning not to. But, you know, it's a gadget and I'm a tech guy, you know?
Right. Okay. Here's the link. Let me first come here and paste it. And I'll come to the Mumble and paste it. And then I'll come over here and paste it so I can show it off on the stream. If I were to pick one up right now, Rich, this is the one I'd pick up. First and foremost, because it literally has a 30-day battery, okay? 99.9, yes, yes. 99.99999% of the ones that you pick up will have like a 2-day battery at most, at absolute most, okay? The ones that have 30-day batteries are typically not watches. They're typically just the little bands, and that's all it is. This is a AMAZFIT Amazfit Bit smartwatch by Humai. I've never heard of them. Humai with all-day heart rate, activity tracker, sleep monitoring, GPS, Bluetooth, USA service, and literally 30-day battery life. This was the number one selling smartwatch on last Black Friday. It sold like four times more than any other smartwatch. It was $110 right around Christmas. It dropped down to around, I think, $85. And then the beginning of January, it dropped down to like $70-ish. And right now, today, it's $79 on Amazon. I'm not spending $200 on a watch that I know I will break or lose or damage or whatever. And something that I would have to constantly take off my wrist and constantly recharge would just drive me to the point where I won't put it back on my wrist. A 30-day battery is much, much more desirable, in my opinion.
Wow. Okay, so the Samsung watch, the N-1 that I was looking at, I think it's the S3. It said it has up to like a 4 or 5 day battery, but it, you know, most people tested say it's like 2 days or less. And depending on how much you use it, of course. Wow. I mean, this is one of those things I'd almost get it for the heck of it.
Right. Yeah. And it also has an always on display. All of the other smartwatches, because their batteries are horrid, putrid, whether it's the Apple Watch or a Samsung watch, it's always off. Because if it's always on, you only get like 12 hours worth of battery. So it's always off until you flick it or whatever, and then it turns on. This is always on for 30 friggin' days. If I were to buy one, this is the one I would buy. I'm just saying, me personally. You're not going to watch videos on the screen, there's no doubt. But if you just need a basic connected device that can connect via Bluetooth and send like heart information back down to your watch, GPS information, back down to your phone. I mean, that kind of stuff. I don't know how you can beat this.
Okay. Am I going to be a dirty, rotten tease if I bring up another topic? All right. So let me finish out watches. So I'm definitely going to take a look at YouTube videos on this and see if it's interestingly enough to pursue further. But I've had a couple of people I've talked to online or, you know, emails, etc. They get a Raspberry Pi and don't know what to do with it. Should we save what to do with it for another episode, or do you want to talk about it now?
I mean, if you have some ideas, go ahead and put it out there.
Well, one of the cool things, and I got to think about things I've done in the past and things that I actually brought it with me because I talked about it. One of the things I like about the Raspberry Pi is PiAware, which works, if you know the website FlightAware, it's to track airplanes. So you can get a TV tuner dongle if you want to wait to get it from China, get it for $8. And you can track aircraft directly from their ADS-B transponders or their Mode-S transponders, which I just thought it was crazy cool. Because if a plane went over, I would, you know, look on the webpage on my local website for the PiAware and see what it was, what altitude, what kind of airplane, where it was coming from. And I just thought that was crazy cool. You can also use the same hardware to monitor the air traffic control. So the controllers and the pilots talking to each other, you can monitor with the same hardware. So I thought that was kind of cool. Just going through my Pi infrastructure, I've got an Odroid XU4 in... It's running Plex, which is basically home version of Netflix for everybody that doesn't know what Plex is, and sonar radar transmission. So sonar and radar are the indexers for the shows. So you could say, hey, this movie is just in the theaters when it comes out, get me a copy, or I want to watch Star Trek Discovery, pull down all of the episodes, and as new ones come out, it'll pull down new ones also. On the same device, I'm running Time Capsule, so it works as a backup for all of my Macs. I have a Pi Zero, and we've got further developments on this project. I'm working with another person running a PBX software. So Asterisk, which was written by, oh gosh, I'm blanking on it, Mark, and I'm probably going to see him in a month, Mark Spencer. Mark Spencer wrote Asterisk, and he sold the company sometime last year. And so you can run a full-blown PBX with a GUI on a Raspberry Pi Zero, and you could actually get free phone service. So I'm teasing a video that'll be coming out that I'm working jointly with somebody else on. And let's see, what else is in my infrastructure? Home Automation Assistant. So that's another big one. I actually have two Pi 3s running Home Automation Assistant, and I'm going to be migrating from one to the other. So it knows who's home when nobody's home. It can turn on and off the alarm. It can open and close the garage door. It can turn on and off lights. I have LED accent lights in areas that automatically go on a half hour before sunset, go off at a specific time. So there's all sorts of fantastic things you can control with it. And lighting is a big thing that you can control. You can also do alerts. So what I'm looking to get to is to be able to do facial recognition, which I just loaded on a Raspberry Pi 3 here, and be able to say, hey, these people are known family members, and I expect them to be on my property. Hey, here's somebody I don't know. It may be the mailman dropping off something. It may be somebody looking to do something wrong. Alert me about that. So those are kinds of things I'm looking to do with Pi devices. I was doing presence detection with Pi Zeros and Bluetooth because everybody drives and everybody has their Bluetooth on because they want to connect to their car. Let's see, what else? Because I'm running Docker containers on my Rock Pro 64 and my Rock 64 for different types of things that I'm testing out. Gosh, I've been talking, Dor. What do you got? Oh, I forgot. Octopi. So to run your 3D printer, which is just a fantastic thing. And I'm sure I got a couple that I've forgotten.
Yeah, if you have a 3D printer and you're not running Octoprint, you are missing out. It's literally like watching a baseball game and all you see is the pitcher's mound. There's so much you're missing out with that one. You can also run OwnCloud, NextCloud, aka your own personal Dropbox, which you can make publicly accessible. And if you use the Own Your Bits version of NextCloud, it comes with the NCP, which is like the NextCloud admin panel, where in literally one click, you can enable stuff like Let's Encrypt and other tools like that. And it also has like video conferencing built into it. I'll say this, the multimedia possibilities with the mini computers are phenomenal as servers or front ends. You can always load like Plex on the back end, and you can load Android on the front end, and then you can literally load anything you can imagine from Hulu, Netflix, anything else, and it really does just work. I would like to do a like digital frame for like calendaring and notifications for the family. That's the one thing I really would like to do. Did you give an update on your Bluetooth presence stuff, Rich?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I talked about it on the show. All right, so the Bluetooth presence, I got a couple of problems. So the Hughes Compound Southern Command has steel studs, which is basically like a Faraday cage. So between the different Wi-Fi that you have 2.4 and you have 5 gigahertz. So 5 gigahertz isn't going to penetrate as far. So I pretty much everything in my house has to run on 2.4 gigahertz. The problem with 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi is that if you set up two Pi Zeros with Bluetooth presence detection on them, that they keep trying to ping and locate Bluetooth devices, Bluetooth runs on 2.4 gigahertz, and your 2.4 gigahertz is nearly useless when you run two of them. So I thought I was smart, and actually one of the guys, oh, I got it right here. Dr. Z said, hey, you know what? What's a good case for a project is you could get a soap holder. Now, if you buy a project case, they might charge you $5 or $10 for a case like this. But if you go to Walmart and spend a whole 99 cents on a soap box, and I drilled a hole in the side of it so I could put my USB cable into it, and I put these on my property, one at the gate and one at a light post halfway between the gate and my garage. And believe it or not, even outside of my house, they still horked up my 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi. So if you're able to use 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, it's okay. It would work really well for you. But what I did change to for presence detection is there's a plugin for Asus WRT. There's plugins for a couple of routers, or if you're running DDWRT. And you can say, hey, these are devices I want to monitor presence of and do, you know, presence detection based on it. Because what I had set up in the house is if it detects nobody's home and the garage door is open, it'll close the garage door automatically. I can also have it work that it'll turn on the alarm system. So it could say, hey, nobody's home. Let me close the garage door and arm the alarm system because somebody forgot to set it.
Gotcha. Yeah. I ain't gonna average. I had no idea Bluetooth went over 2.4, which that would have had me confused for weeks. I'll say that weeks, because I was getting really close to do it because I had the two Raspberry Pi Zeros. And I dislike the fact that even if you put them at the edge of your network, I would think things then in the middle wouldn't have a problem, but I guess not.
And I was hoping, there's still maybe hope. I don't know enough about Bluetooth. If you could turn the power down. If you could turn the wattage going to the Bluetooth down somehow, maybe somebody listening will tell us how to do that, that it would be more useful. And what I was hoping is that I could detect, hey, here's, you know, my car and my phone at the gate, and then here's my car and my phone at the post. I was hoping to maybe do three, have one at the corner of the garage. So it would know, hey, I drove into the property, so I've arrived, or it knows I've departed based on which one it saw me last at, that kind of thing. Yeah, but right now at the current power settings, it's totally messing up my 2.4. But if you run 5 gigahertz at your house, it might be useful.
Well, I don't run 5 because it just doesn't go as far. What I will say that you might be able to do is quite literally just take the Raspberry Pi Zero, take cardboard and aluminum foil. Maybe like shield it and make sure the Pi is literally only gathering signals from outside your network. That's the only thing I can think that might be sufficient.
Okay, so hold on. Let me look at a Pi Zero. So the problem with that, I don't know where on the board is the Wi-Fi antenna versus the Bluetooth antenna. So
right,
what I might,
they're basically on the exact same chip.
All right. So there's two solutions to that. Either you're going to have to cut the trace and put an external Wi-Fi antenna on it and put, you know, a cone, like you described with, you could take, 3M Spray 77, I think Elmer's Glue makes that now also. And you could spray that on, you know, cardboard, you know, like construction poster board, and put tin foil on it, use a brush, spread it out, meaning a brush on the tin foil. You place cardboard, spray 77, put the tin foil down, use some sort of brush and brush it out so it's not all crinkly. And you could make some sort of cone and put your Raspberry Pi Zero in that. But I would say you'd have to run an external Wi-Fi antenna outside of it so you're not blocking off. And you may have to ground that cone so it's a proper Faraday cage-ish like device. And that may work. That might be a good idea. So if I aim the Bluetooth away from my house, which I could do in that scenario, I might give that a try.
Yeah, I will say disabling the onboard Wi-Fi and enabling the add-on Wi-Fi, I've always had, I don't want to say issues with, it always took me multiple tries to get that right. But then you would need to take what was a, you know, $5 investment or $10 investment and bump it up to a, you know, $15, $20 investment per unit, which is not cool.
Yeah, because you're going to have to, I did get some, let's see, do I have an adapter? There's a couple of ways to do it. You could do it a little bit on the cheap. What you really need is something that'll adapt the regular USB port, or I'm sorry, a regular USB port down to a micro B. And you can pick those up, but then you're going to have to power the Raspberry Pi. You're not going to be able to get to the connector here. You're going to have to solder onto the test probe ports right here for power, or the pins. I think you can power through one of the pins. So you could do it still on the cheap without buying a hub adapter type setup.
Gotcha. And yeah, to me, the other use case I think a lot of people could have with a Raspberry Pi is just a simple humidity water sensor, and literally put it in your laundry room, washroom, underneath your kitchen sink kind of thing, just so if there is a leak, you will be notified about it instead of finding it accidentally.
So the Pi devices, here's another cool thing, is you really only need one Pi device, and you can use Dallas Semiconductor, I think was bought by Microchip, but they still use the Dallas Semi part numbers. I think it's the DS128. Which is their single line. They have single wire sensors. Really, it's two wires, you know, power and ground. And they're, each one has a unique address. So you could literally put temperature probes, or, you know, Dallas Semiconductor one wire probes all over your house for temperature, humidity, whatever. They're pennies. These things cost nothing. And use one pin on a Raspberry Pi, because all of them are individually addressable, and they'll report back on that one communication line.
Very cool. Okay, Rich, I don't have anything more this week. I will say there's definitely more links in the notes, but I don't think any of them are, crazily exciting. I will say I am constantly interested in doing stuff with ESP266 devices, but I ain't gonna lie, it's a question of time, and I just really don't have the time to do them
now. They're super cheap, and there's a new device that came out. The guy's video channel, YouTube channel, is The Hookup, and I'll tell you what, if you go to flyingrich.com, videos I like are also posted there, so I'll definitely make sure I like the video this guy just posted, and if you go to flyingrich.com, you can see it.
Very cool. Okay, Rich, since you already said the website, and since Google Plus is dying, is there any place else people can catch up with you?
Yeah, pretty much. Flyingrich.com is the best place. There's a contact me site, and I'm happy to talk to you. If you got a question about what can I do with a Pi, or I bought a Pi, I don't know what to do with it, or, you know, have any questions like that, I'm happy to help you out.
Very cool. And if you want to send us an email, it is click. minipc@podnuts.com. We actually do have what looks like an email here. It was make sure you pronounce silicone, and I can't say it. That's how bad I am.
Silicone and silicon.
Thank you. Make sure you say them differently.
So one's for women, one's for computers.
Well, one makes spatulas. Spatulas. We're going to stick with spatulas. Yeah, it was that one. That was one email. Yeah, okay, that was email. Okay. If you send us an email, minipc@podnuts.com, we will get it, address it, and reply. You can send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT. If you like private, isolated, non-indexable by search engines chat servers. We have a Mattermost server at mmpodnuts.com. You can go there, but you can't log in unless you send me an email. We have a Discord server. If you want access to that, don't hesitate. Shoot me an email. We also have IRC on Freenode. I'm in there when I can be, is what I'll say. And I'm still on Google Plus, and I don't see myself going to any other network unless a bunch of people tell me I have to go to some other system. And if no one tells me, I'm not going to go to any of them.
I'm sad about Google Plus because they're, out of all of the social media sites, I've enjoyed that the most.
I agree. It's the one with the least amount of grandparents and the least amount of selfies and the least amount of
memes, whatever. It was a lot of tech people, or at least tech people seem to go there, and I'll have to get my tech fixed somewhere else.
Yeah, there was much less hate speech versus tech content compared to every other service I've ever seen. And by hate speech, I mean anything political, religious, ageist, anything, because everybody is offended by any of it, kind of thing. Okay, I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for their support. Thank the couple people who were watching live. Thank you very much. And do not forget, please, if you can support Eric, his family, we're going to try to help them as much as we can, because, you know, we all need help once in a while. This month, if you are giving money to Podnuts, every penny going to Podnuts this month will be going to Eric. Or you can suspend Podnuts donations and follow the link to the GoFundMe and help Eric out. I want to thank everyone again, and we will talk to everyone hopefully in about a week.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network, and we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.